Welcome one and all once again to Dual World in episode 121. We're coming to you from this lovely Sunday, the start of football season according to my Twitter timeline.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that Yahoo reminded me I should set my fantasy league on like Wednesday.
My fantasy quarterback was Peyton Manning. I'll just let you dwell on that for a little bit. He had 7 touchdowns on Thursday.
Yeah, I was so excited because he was my opponent's quarterback this week. So,
but you don't even have to bother checking your stuff today. You're done.
I think I checked on Friday morning, and the person had like 75 points already.
Yep.
I'm like, okay, you know what? I'm not even going to bother.
Yep.
But apparently we're boring Martin, so let's get on the way.
Football.
Football. We have he's yawned in the backyard. Martin's here this week.
Hello.
As well as Anthony.
I just checked. I'm dehydrated. Confirmed.
Well, you should probably work on that then. So yeah, it's been a very quiet week for news. I imagine next week won't be because Sony has their press conference. By the time this goes up, Sony's press conference should be over. But, you know, we can't. I think it's like 1 a.m. for me, and I'm not staying up for that. Either way, we'll get to the news in a bit. Let's start with what you've been playing recently. And I guess I'll just start because I apparently take forever to finish video games. So I'm still playing the same stuff I've been playing since, like, August. And I'm getting further and further. I think I'm near the end of Mario and Luigi Dream Team. I'm in Bowser's Castle. I know, spoilers, the game ends in Bowser's Castle, whatever.
Whoa.
But yeah, here's the thing. I don't have the game has an odd pacing to it. I'm not going to say it's necessarily slow or padded out. I don't feel like any part really feels terrible. But I do feel like the game doesn't get going for quite some time. And the last maybe 5 to 10 hours has really been what I wanted from the game. Kind of giving you all these great tools, all these different legendary works, and all these throw abilities, and kind of just making you go wild with them having various types of environmental puzzles that you figure out using these abilities. But the game takes its time kind of ramping up and giving you all these abilities. So by the time you get it, you've been playing the game for 15-20 hours already, and then it's kind of like, okay, now you have these tools, we kind of showing you how to use them all, now we're going to let you go. And I'm like, yeah, you should have done that like with hour 10 or so. I get that it's an RPG and it's a different RPG. It's also the fourth one in the series, and not a lot has changed since then.
So obviously, because a lot hasn't changed, they need tutorials that you can't skip.
Yeah, I mean, some of it again makes sense because I mean, there aren't many games like Mario and Luigi on the market. There aren't any that come to mind, really. We control two characters kind of independently in battle, but at the same time, it's not something that you need to harp on. If anything, I think they need to weave it so that you could do certain tutorials, like have them up in menus instead of having to go through them. Because I appreciate them doing this, but at the same time, it does get annoying at times where they kind of weave the tutorial into the story and having it at the start of the game where you kind of learn the basics and get the world. I think it works better in something like Zelda where it makes sense because you're also world-building at the same time you're introducing this. Where with Mario, it's just kind of like, yeah, I get it. I can jump on these dudes. I don't need a lesson in that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it does let you skip a lot. I mean, I give it a hard time, but there are some things where it does not let you skip, and you get a little bit frustrated with that. But that's, you can keep talking on it, but I've been playing it as well, and I have my impressions to give.
Yeah, I mean, I understand that a lot of stuff you can't skip is new mechanics that are being introduced in this series in particular, or this release, I should say. At the same time, like, for example, the bro attacks and the legendary attacks are completely optional tutorials. You don't even have to read those. So why couldn't the rest of the game be like that? Oh, you got the hammer. Here's a tutorial in case you want to refresh on how to use the hammer. Or here's, you know, like how to dodge and stuff like that. And the thing is, the game gives you visual prompts for a lot of these things. It tells you when to dodge. You know, it tells you if you're going to have to jump. It tells you if you're going to have to use a hammer. It tells you if you can move in and out of the screen for various stuff. So they have an idea of, like, okay, we can relay information visually. And then it's like, okay, you know what, we're going to have to sit here and explain it as well. And the thing that drives me nuts, and I know part of this is my fault, is like sometimes I hate tutorials, so I speed through them, and they always mark the first option as, yes, I want to hear this again, instead of no.
That is Gapora syndrome.
So it's like, no, I didn't want to hit this again. Why is that the first option? You should note that I'm just like typing A at this point. Just kind of get me out of here. I don't want to hear this person talk again. And the other thing is, I think, I hopefully we'll have a review if I ever finish this game. I also think it's weaker than Bowser's Inside Story and even Superstar Saga, because I don't think it has as component universe or characters. Like, I don't, like, the main bad guy doesn't even really have a presence in the game until, like, they really don't have a presence in the game. I mean, Princess Peach isn't even captured on your watch. She's captured off camera, and you just told about it when you end up being tricked by them at some point. But yeah, it's really...
Superstar Saga?
Huh?
Were you talking about Superstar Saga?
No, I'm talking about this one, Dream Team.
Oh, okay. Gotcha.
Yeah, because, like, a lot of stuff, a lot of the progression... I don't want to say it's a fetch quest at the beginning, but it's kind of like, oh, we need you to help do this, we need you to help do that. And then you find out, like, oh, yeah, Bowser and this other guy teamed up, and they've kidnapped the princess, so you gotta go rescue her. It's like, okay. But yeah, it's like the game takes a while to get going. When it finally gets there, though, it's good, but it's taken way too long to get there.
Yeah.
I'm also not keen on the giant Ouija battles. I enjoyed the Bowser battles, because I think giant Bowser's awesome. Dreamy Ouija just feels kind of like the same thing, and I hate the fact that these are huge battles that you get no XP for. It's
right.
Really weird. But yeah, I mean, I would say it's still a good game. It's a very different RPG. It just really, really takes its time getting going. And by the time it gets going, I think some people may have given up on the game or have been burnt out by the negatives that come before it.
I powered through it, All right, I powered through a lot of it. Right now, I just got past the desert. And, I mean, there are parts that do drag a little bit, but when it comes down to it and what the selling point of this game is the incredible battle system, which I will, you know, defend vigorously. It's so much fun. There's so much charm. There's action. I mean, timing. Like, that's what sells the series for me, and that's what I enjoy. And it's a funny game. It's charming. The music's great. The music, actually, some of it reminds me of the Tales of Symphonia game back on GameCube, which kind of brought back some nostalgia for me. But, you know, it's a really polished game. And I think I read on Kotaku that, like, it was a 4 or 5 year development cycle for this? And they had to, like, start from scratch 2 or 3 different times?
At most I would say 4, because I think Bowser's Inside Story came out in 2009. I think part of the reason they started over is because they also switched consoles.
Yeah. But, like, even ideas, and I mean, they can have level design and stuff, but I thought that I heard or read that they started from scratch a number of times, which has got to be, you know, a little demoralizing, but they were clearly happy enough with this one to launch it, and I've been enjoying it.
Yeah, like I said, it's not a bad game. It's just that the game takes its time kind of letting you go free, I guess, giving you complete control over your situation. Like, there are certain times, especially in the dream worlds, where I'll see something like, oh, okay, I know what to do here. But you can't trigger it until the game says, okay, we have to teach this guy what to do now and how to do it. And I'm like, yeah, but I figured this out. Why didn't you just let me do it when I figured it out and was trying to do exactly what you told me to do anyhow?
Yep.
But yes, getting away from that, let's go to Martin for non-Nintendo games. What have you been playing recently?
Well, I've been playing Kills on Mercenary, but the review of that is on the side. I guess that's enough about that game at this point.
Well, you can still talk about it.
I don't know what else to say except what is in the review. I mean, I really loved it. I gave it the 7 out of 7 on our review scale. I mean, I've seen our reviews don't agree with me, but I think those guys really thought about how to do a first-person shooter on a portable system, and that's reflected in how the progression works, and that you earn experience, or in this case, just money, no matter how, if you play the single-player portion of the game or the multiplayer portion, it all is just one pool. So no matter what you play or where you play or when you play, it's all progress for everything, which is pretty great, I think, for a portable title. And while the campaign is pretty short for, like, I think it finishes in, like, 4 hours, but might take you 5 or 6, depending on how you play, I think they took, like, inspiration from GoldenEye for the N64. I mean, when you remember, the higher difficulty levels had, like, always new objectives added to them that you had to fulfill. So in this game, the difficulty doesn't change for objectives, but there are these things called contracts, which add new objectives to your mission, and for most part also make them more difficult. You always have a precision, a stealth, and a demolition contract. You can choose which one to take, and the difficulty is separate from that. That basically only makes it more, it makes it easier or harder and earns you more or less money in addition to the contract. And precision contract, for example, can be, I don't know, finish the mission in under 20 minutes, earn 25 headshots with a specific gun, and also rescue all the hostages. Those are all objectives that were not there previously, which, if you just play the campaign for the first time, it's best just normal going through the story and just going through the level, which of course have their usual objectives, but there's a lot of stuff that gets added if you play those contracts. And that's a nice thing to basically get you back to story missions, and those can actually be pretty challenging and interesting to do, especially the stealth contracts, since the game actually is pretty good at giving you options in different parts of these levels. So they are often like more open parts, and then you can basically choose to get in, like, guns blazing, or maybe stealth the whole way through it, which is, for the most part, actually possible, which is kind of cool. And, yeah, the multiplayer is also pretty fun. I mean, it has standard stuff like deathmatch and team deathmatch, which is not that interesting, I have to say, but the Warzone mode, which comes over from the Control Killzone games, is still really cool with playing one match which goes through different modes within it. I think it's still really cool, and I'm still wondering why no other shooter has actually copied that from Killzone, because I think it's actually a really good idea.
I think so too. I think the problem is just probably the length of a match, because a lot of shooters, it's probably 5-10 minutes at most, and having multiple modes and multiple stuff doesn't really count. And from my experience with Halo, which is the shooter I play the most, a lot of people are just in it to kill. They don't care about, like, objective modes and all that other stuff. Nothing's greater than playing, like, King of the Hill and having everybody just kill people instead of actually going for the hill.
Yeah, but like I said, deathmatch, team deathmatch are also still there if you want it, and team deathmatch is also still part of Warzone, but it adds, like, this stuff where you have to collect, like, these cards from enemies that you have killed, otherwise it doesn't count as a kill. It's kind of like the tags thing from Call of Duty. And the other thing is, like, hacking. Like, there are these drops that just come from above into the map, and then you have to hack them in order to get points, and then you actually use the hacking minigame from a single player where you have to match the symbols, and having that in a multiplayer match is kind of cool. So you have to be pretty fast with it, and at the same time hope that your teammates maybe support you so you don't get shot while you're trying to hack the thing. I think it's a really good game, and I will definitely continue to play it, actually, as soon as I get my bigger memory card, because right now I also want to play Persona, but this game is so big that I can't have all those games at the same time on my Vita.
That's no fun.
Yeah.
But yeah, it sounds like a good thing. I mean, I'm not huge in the kills. I do agree with you, because I remember Uncharted did something like that with the Royal multiplayer, where you'd have, like, at round one would be a capture the flag, round two would be a, you know, deathmatch, round three would be a, they have that weird idle thing.
Yeah, so, right. Yeah. Uncharted did something like that, that's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it gives a variety, and it allows you to, especially if you pay attention to, you know, change up your strategy.
Yeah.
Which is good.
And it keeps the game interesting also. Maybe one team is better at one mode than the other, and it can not just be a thing about kills that way. I mean, maybe if you're not as good as killing people, maybe the hacking thing or the interrogation mode will be better for you. Because interrogation, for example, requires entirely different tactics. Like, you can only engage in interrogation if you engage in a melee attack from behind. Or the other possibility is if you have the handgun, which has, like, tranquilizer darts. So you can basically tranquilize an enemy and then try to interrogate them. But that's also risky because the tranquilizer gun has it's only, like, a one-shot gun. And, of course, the other team can still help him up and get you off him, stuff like that. So it's, I think it's really interesting and pretty fun.
1 second, I'll be right back, guys.
What else, have you been playing anything else? Well, actually, you're putting up a review for Amnesia tomorrow, so we might as well talk about it now, too.
Yeah, so I've been writing the review for Amnesia Machine for Pigs, because we got a review copy for that. And I guess I can fully talk about it, right? This will.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, way after.
Okay, this will go up after the embargo, so it's fine. Okay. I think I talked about Amnesia before. I mean, the first one, The Dark Descent, on the podcast, and how I really liked it, and how it was really good at building up the tension, having, like, this constant feel of dread, and then having the release and really good chuck moments. The problem, and the thing is, I was really hoping that a Machine for Pigs would deliver the same feeling that I had with The Dark Descent, but it really doesn't. I think the new Amnesia Machine for Pigs is just fine. That's probably the best I would say it. It's fine. This
so
one is
where exactly does it fail? Where do you feel like it falls behind the original for you?
So when it comes to the story stuff and building an interesting environment to traverse through, I think that's actually something that might actually be better than in the first game. I mean, the story is interesting. You are, again, someone who lost his memory. I mean, otherwise the name Amnesia wouldn't make much sense. But to still have this memory of your kids and that they are in danger and you try to get to your kids. And the story is actually kind of interesting, although similar to the first one. And the environments, I actually think, are pretty cool because they didn't go for this gothic feeling that the first game had. Instead, it starts out kind of gothic-like in this mansion. But very soon it changes quite a bit because you go underneath it and it's all just machinery and pipes and stuff like that. And they do a really good job together with sound design to make this seem menacing. But the big problem is they undermine themselves in introducing this feeling of dread. A big part of Amnesia was that there wasn't combat, and there still isn't combat, but at least there was some kind of resource management, something that kept you on your toes all the time. In the first game, it was, on the one hand, your sanity. Every time you were in the dark or looked at a monster, you were losing sanity, and that would make you slower, and you were possibly could die if you lose all your sanity. And the other thing was stuff that basically creates light sources. There was on one hand the oil for your lamp, so you couldn't use your lamp all the time to create light for yourself, and which had two effects. On one end, for the player, you don't see everything, which, of course, again, raises this feeling of dread, On the other hand, it's a problem for your character in game because the character might lose sanity in the dark. And the other thing was Tinder boxes, which basically were a thing you used to make lights in the environment, like light torches or candles and stuff. And in this game, since in 1899, and it's about a guy who's really into technology, his whole mansion, the machinery is all already like running also on some kind of electricity. And so is your lantern in this game, which means there no longer is any reason to not have your lantern out. Basically, if something is dark, whatever, I just use my lantern. So I basically walked around the whole game with my lantern out. There wasn't really any reason to not do that. I could see better. The environment was less scary. And so on. Tinder boxes, something like that, is also no longer needed. If there is any light that's out, for the most part, there was like lights on desks or something like that. You could just go over and activate them, like by flipping a switch, and they would go on. So that's a big problem, I think. And the sanity thing is also no longer in the game. So the enemies are also less of a threat because of that. There are still, like, there are only a couple of instances where actually have where enemies are actually a threat. They might appear in some cases, but are tested out. In those cases, sometimes it's just a scripted event that's happening that you just quickly see an enemy, but they're not actually ever going to kill you in any way or attack you. So I think there were like 4 or 5 cases where actually the enemy were able to attack me. And even in both cases...
How do you fend them off?
You don't, you run.
Oh, so...
You run or hide.
So it's like Silent Hill Shattered Memories, I think it is?
Yeah. And that's... Well, let me continue. And the problem is, since you can... Now, the sanity thing is no longer a problem. You can just look at the enemies. And the problem is, in horror, the best horror is for the stuff you don't actually see. And very early on, basically, I was able to see the enemies. And sometimes later, they even have... It's not really a spoiler. They have cells where these enemies are in. And they are fully lighted. You are in a safe environment. You can basically look through the window of the cell, take a good look at how what these things look like. And you lose all fear of them, because you've already seen them, you know what they are, and they're not that scary anymore. I actually kind of felt pity for them after a while, when you've seen some of them. And Shattered Memories is actually a good comparison. I basically had also the problem with Shattered Memories, because after a while, Shattered Memories, you realize, well, there isn't really any danger outside of those cases when the ice thing happens. And why should I be afraid of anything that's happening outside of that? And that's kind of the feeling after a while that started with Amnesia Machine for Pigs for me. And I kind of just went through the game not really being afraid of anything that's happening. So early on, I had still a case where I was like taken aback by a quick jump scare, but like after like 1.5 hours in or something, I realized that I don't really have to. And I think that's a problem for a game that wants to be a horror game, and especially one that...
I think that's a huge problem if you can't be afraid of the game.
And especially one that is the follow-up to Ninja of the Dark Descent, which was very, very effective until the end in still shocking you with stuff. So, after all, I think it's kind of similar to... I mean, this game is now done not by Frictional Games, but the Chinese Room, who also did Diesta, which was like this storytelling, first-person storytelling experimental game. And so I kind of had a feeling after finishing it, this is kind of similar to the Esther, it's just longer and actually with enemies. So it's an interesting story experience. The environments are often kind of interesting, but that's basically where the game ends for me. And I just can't fully recommend this title because of that, which is kind of a shame. I was really looking forward to this game.
Okay. So there you go. Anthony, have you been playing anything else?
I've been playing a lot, actually, surprisingly, because I usually don't have time, but like we mentioned before, I've been playing Mario and Luigi. I've been taking a kind of hiatus from Animal Crossing, but I decided to load it up. And the fun news is, it's September, so there's a bunch of new bugs, the new fish, available to catch. And you'll also start to see that the trees and grass and stuff are growing a little bit more yellow as it's getting ready for fall. So, you know, that's always good. And that's some of the appeal of Animal Crossing, being able to come back and see those changes. So it's actually kind of what I'm doing a little bit right now, see if I can catch any things. As far as stuff coming up and what I've been doing now, I'm now 100% sold on the Wonderful 101. I've heard all the you know, drawbacks of it, but I also keep
no
hearing...
No pun intended.
But I also keep hearing, you know, how just the charm and the fun of the game overcomes any frustrations that you might have with it. And I'm a huge fan of Beautiful Joe, and this just smacks of the charm that had and the fun. And the demo was a lot of chaos, a lot of stuff going on, but at the same time, you feel like such a badass when you get the hang of the controls and when you start, you know, destroying everything and, you know, fighting and dodging and guarding with all the heroes that you get with you, and then drawing your weapons to use them is pretty neat. Obviously, the demo doesn't have the hammer portion that people get stuck with, but I played it, and, you know, if you have a Wii U and you're concerned about the lack of support, then, you know, you owe it to yourself to go pick this up to support projects like these, to show developers and publishers mostly, that these kind of games are in demand. So that comes out a little bit later this month. And then I've been playing a little bit of Pikmin 3. I didn't pick up either of the first two, but it's actually been a couple weeks since I powered it up, and I've enjoyed it. But the Wonderful 101, as far as that kind of, you know, controlling a bunch of people, that is more my speed than Pikmin is. But I have enjoyed Pikmin as the first game, and it has some really cool co-op missions to go with it too. So I need to play more of that. And what I'm really looking forward to is going back through Wind Waker HD when it comes out. I'm seeing more screens and more videos about just how gorgeous it looks, specifically like sunrise and sunset. So I'm really looking forward to that. But those are the kind of things that I've been diving into.
Okay. Did you end up picking up Rayman Legends or not yet?
Yes, I did. And I don't know how I missed that. I guess just focused on other stuff. Rayman Legends, that was a day one for me, and it's wonderful. It is. Unfortunately, I have the same unhappiness when it comes when as some of the more negative reviews did when it comes to levels that are based on Murphy. It is so free. Like, after playing the Murphy levels, which if you're not familiar with it, Murphy is on the Wii U, you use the gamepad's touchscreen. On the other systems, you use, I think, timing-based button presses to guide a computer-controlled AI through the level. Or if you have a friend, you can control him through the level. But they're interesting for sure, but I kind of wish they weren't, you know, levels along the path. I wish that they were, you know, off to the side, that you could do these levels if you wanted. Kind of like how New Super Mario Brothers did the gamepad levels, just as a kind of a bonus section. I'm an OCD completionist, and when I pass by a painting because it's a Murphy level, it kills me. And it also doesn't let me unlock further levels because I haven't completed them. But as far as the rest of it goes, it is just oozing with charm. It's one of the prettiest games I've seen in a while. The controls aren't as tight as the Mario games, but the part where it does beat it is, one, but just the originality and the, you know,
they can go anywhere with what they do. Their fruit levels, their, you know, Lucha Libre levels, and a lot of things that, you know, anything you can think of. It's just quirky, and it's wacky, and it's a lot of fun. And I think it's a little more co-op friendly because you can't bump into each other. But you can also still, you know, use each other, lift each other up to get to higher places. So I think it's more co-op friendly, and I'm having a blast with it.
I will still defend bumping into people. I think it adds a great element of chaos to the game. I know chaos isn't for everybody, but it does make for a more enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Because it does kind of cater towards actually cooperating and speaking among your teammates so you don't end up in the same space.
That's a good
point. But yeah, I know it's not for everybody because it does end up, you know, like, oh man, I was jumping on that platform, you ran into me, you jumped on my head, you spiked me into the ground. Sometimes you do it on purpose. I'm not going to say I haven't.
Right.
And I guess with Rayman, that's a good face to start with the news, and it picks up from last week, where it came out this week that the PlayStation Vita version of Rayman Legends will actually get the content that it's missing later on via a free patch, due to the fact that I guess they just simply ran out of time.
Yeah, that's what it looks like. Apparently the multi-platform development was too taxing for them, because it wasn't planned as a multi-platform title to begin with. So.
Yeah. To be fair, they did have like 7 months.
Yeah.
I mean, there are games made in that time. I'm not saying good games, but there are games made in that time.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they have a multi-platform engine, but I guess it's still a lot of work, of course, so understandable, but they really could have come out earlier with just saying that they took their sweet time with it.
Yeah. Well, to be fair to them, it was before the release of the Vita version. So.
Yeah, but it was like, okay, why is this pushback? And then people were finding out, like, well, these levels are missing. And then for a while, nobody for Ubisoft talked, which was kind of weird.
Yeah, well, I think part of it was, I mean, you make it sound like it was a long period of time. It was like 3 or 4 days, and part of it was during PAX week, and it was also a holiday week. It was a holiday weekend for us. Yes, I'm giving excuses for Ubisoft. I'm just saying, like, I feel like there was no malice on, okay, I assume there was some malice on their part. I was assuming they would hope people wouldn't notice until they bought it. But I feel like them not responding wasn't just them trying to ignore it. I think it was just really just bad timing.
But I mean, it's not like they put out like a huge press release. That's something they could have tied up in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Just kind of, but I mean, at the same time, it also took the game press a while to get the story going for them to actually reach up to Ubisoft.
Maybe.
Okay, so yeah, I mean, that's good for Vita owners. The two of you out there can finally get Rayman Legends. Speaking of handheld titles, which apparently is a big part of this week's news, actually this morning, Nintendo and Capcom announced the Monster Hunter 4 Nintendo content.
Yeah.
Which will be a Zelda... Well, this is a Zelda costume. It's a Zelda
Link costume.
It's a Master Sword, it's the Hyrule Shield, and I believe it's the Spirit Bow, whatever the one.
The bow thing from Zelda.
Well, I think this is particularly Skyward Sword.
I don't know the specifics, whatever.
Yeah, and I believe Mario and Luigi costumes for the Fiennes.
Yeah. And the Yoshi costume for your pig. And like these Nintendo backgrounds for your guild cards.
Yeah, I don't know what the guild cards are exactly, but
it's basically just you have basically your player profile where all the information of your character is, like which weapon you're using, how long you've played, etc. And when you meet other people in the game online or offline, you can give them your guild cards, you basically exchange them, and so you basically have them now kind of as your in-game friend, and also when you're playing the multiplayer content offline, you can use those guild cards to send people on quests that you are not actually going on. So they are doing stuff for you.
Okay.
Yeah. And then you see the backgrounds and stuff. So.
But yeah, it's an interesting development. I mean, in Japan, it really doesn't do anything for the game because I think in Japan it actually helps sell that one and it helps Monster Hunter out.
Probably, yeah.
But I think hopefully, as I also pitched, I think this is probably a better move for the West, where Zelda would help with it and it looks proper in the game. He seems to fit in that game's world well enough.
Yeah, it looks fine actually.
Yeah, so I think, you know, when it comes out to Europe and North America, I think advertising would think would help. And I also assume that means that this game's coming to the West. I mean, granted, the last few have, but you can never be sure with some of these franchises because they never really catch on.
I really hope they announce something soon about the West.
Well, I mean, Nintendo has a very busy year in the West.
Doesn't have to be this year.
I'm just saying, because you also got worried about Pokemon this week. Well, I guess you'd say more words about Pokemon this week. Pokemon X and Y, they had a Nintendo Direct for that as well. And this one, I think, announced the Pokemon Bank.
Yeah.
Which is a pay-for-service, which I think they haven't announced the price for.
$5 a year.
Oh, that's not bad at all. But, I mean, the purpose of this is basically for you to store your Pokemon from this gen and forward, right? So it's basically the way for them to transfer your Pokemon going forward.
I think it's kind of shitty.
Do tell.
I mean, you're paying $5 a year for cloud saving, basically, for one game?
Yeah.
But, I don't know. That seems weird to me.
It does seem weird. I think people are willing to pay for Pokemon. I think part of it is also not just for the cloud saving. Well, I mean, it is basically the cloud saving, but I think people just—it's kind of like a backup protection in case your Pokemon game, your Pokemon save file gets deleted or something.
Yeah.
So that you have all your Pokemon saved.
This is from the company that charged $10 for a 3D Pokedex or whatever it was.
To be fair, they did offer the Pokedex for free. I don't know if the free one's still available though.
Yeah. Still, I think it's kind of weird. What they actually should have done is maybe introduce such a solution for all their games. That might be nice.
Yeah, that's what I was confused about, because as far as I can tell, it only works with this gen, Pokemon X and Y.
Yeah.
Even with Pokemon Black and White 1 and 2,
yeah.
You need a separate app built into this app to do that.
Yep.
So, from my understanding, like going forward, it seems like it'd be unfair because you could store your level 60-something Pokemon from this game, and when the next one comes out, the first city you get to, can you just go into your PC when the rest?
Yeah, I mean, you could do that now, but isn't there? I mean, the game has a built-in thing where Pokemon above a certain level won't obey you if you don't have the badge for it.
Right. True.
So I mean, competitively, it's probably unfair, but competitively, they also kind of they even the playing field, I guess. So like, you'll have like level 25. So if you're 28 and somebody's a 21, everybody will just hit 25 to be even. So they have systems built in to make it fair, but yeah, like Martin said, if this was a thing that was like, okay, you can take in your Pokemon from, I guess the problem with Pokemon games
My real problem is also, like I said, it's paying for cloud saves for just one game. I mean, $5 a year is not that much, but how many Pokemon games do come out that you really need to pay that every year?
There are going to be Pokemon fans who are going to pay it, and I think that's the scary part.
I think it's not great.
$5 a year. It's less than 50 cents a month.
Yeah, sure, it is. I said it's not much, but still, for one game, it's weird.
I spend $5 on lunch.
Sure.
It is weird, and here's the thing.
I think for this one game, they probably could have gotten away with making it free.
I mean, as far as I know, you don't need the Pokemon Bank.
Right.
Yeah.
It's not an essential part of the game. I think that's another thing. Is that you can still, I assume you can still do the Pokemon transfer stuff and future generations how they usually do it, which is really a very not a uniform system because they do it very differently for every generation, just depending on their technology. Like the other part of the Poke Bank, like we mentioned, is the Poke Transporter, which allows you to bring a Pokemon from Black and White 1 and 2 into Pokemon X and Y. And this is free.
Okay.
So, I mean, you can bring in your Pokemon for free. I guess just storing them, which I honestly don't know the point of storing your Pokemon. Like you said, during a generation, I can see it as a transitional thing, and it makes no sense to pay $5 a year until then.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's a very weird thing.
Yeah.
But some people are super excited for it. I'm still trying to wrap my head around, because I think you have a max of, like, 3,000 Pokemon. That would mean you'd need, like, 3 of every type.
Hmm. So for me, it just seems totally useless and nothing I would ever pay money for.
Well, I can't speak for all of you, but I would say that I feel like part of this is probably because we're not hardcore Pokemon players.
But even still, then you probably still have a game and can transfer your Pokemon in the other way that doesn't cost you any money.
Yeah, and I mean, they allow you to do that, but I assume for this is basically a way to say, because you only have 6 Pokemon on your team, you don't need to have all like 500. So this is kind of a way for you to store all of them up in case anything happens to your save, in case, you know, like, you just want to put your legendary up there, you want to, and I think the other reason they're doing this is partially to get rid of, like, hacked Pokemon and broken Pokemon and all that other stuff. But yeah, it's a very, I don't know the intricacies of Pokemon. I have never figured it out in 15 years. I know there's a huge fan base for it. I enjoy the games well enough, but I don't go in to the fandom, as it were. So, yeah, I don't get the purpose of this either, but there is a 25-page thread on Gaff about it, so I assume some people are excited for it. And the other thing, and this I am excited for, is that they didn't say when, but some point during the game, you will get a choice to pick from the original 3 starters, Venusaur, Charmander, my boy Squirtle.
Yeah, Squirtle.
Oh, Bulbasaur, I'm sorry, not Venusaur. And each of these 3 Pokemon's final form has a Mega Evolution now as well. So Venusaur, Blastoise, Charizard has a new Digiform, as it is. Venusaur, I feel, gets the screwed over. He just gets a flower on his head. I think Mega Blastoise and the Mega Charizard looks awesome, though. I haven't seen this Pokemon Direct. I don't really want to watch it. So I'm not really sure how Mega Evolutions work. I know you have a carry-on item, but can you only use it once?
I really don't know.
This is when we need Daniel. Daniel's our expert. So yes, before we offend somebody or try to say something stupid, let's move on from Pokemon. It was also announced that, well, I think this was announced beforehand, but more came out this week. Bravely Default for the win, no, for the sequel, I should say, is an enhanced version of Bravely Default, which is the version that we're getting in the West, but it's also it's kind of like a pseudo sequel for them to build a sequel. Something really special like that, something only Square Enix can do.
You mean like, kind of like it has expansion content in it?
Yeah, it's like an expansion pack, but it's an expansion pack to fund the sequel. It's kind of like the Gran Turismo Prologue games, where it's like, we'll use the technology from the game to kind of give you a very expensive demo.
Okay. You're not selling me on it.
Well, I mean, for us it makes no difference.
Okay, that's true.
For us, it just means we get an enhanced version of the original game anyhow, so we're not getting two versions.
Then whatever, we get a better game for it, probably.
Yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of the improvement sounds great. Like, you can, I think you can control the rate of random battles on the battlefield. You can, there's a lot of different changes. There's additional content, there's more dialogue options. I think there's more languages included. So, I mean, for us, it's all good. It's just a really weird setup if you're in Japan, but we're not, so we're just
say something about the title of this game?
It's awful.
Yeah, it's awful. Please, Japan, can you stop with these stupid, dumb titles? Like, Bravely Default for the sequel. What's the new Guilty Gear called? Guilty Gear Xrd. XRD, what the fuck? Stop
to
it.
Be fair,
stop
to be fair,
it.
I mean, it's not like we're much better. I mean, we had the phrase where everything was Sky, Skyrim, Skyfall, Skyward Sword. He had the Astrobus, the Astrobus.
It's something. The Astrobus. A bunch of gibberish. Like what was this? What was this Final Fantasy fighting game called? Duodecim or something like that? What the fuck?
Okay, what about something like Bulletstorm? Bulletstorm's a pretty stupid name.
It's a stupid name, but still is a word that exists.
I'm sure it makes sense to them. It's just really... Yeah. It's just... I don't mind the names. It's something different. Naaman is the least of my problems. Naaman goes with box arts to me. I always find it weird when people complain about how a box art looks, because you don't stare at it for more than 2 seconds as you put the game in this tray, and the boss goes somewhere else.
Or Kingdom Hearts 365 by...
Okay, we're not going to get we're not going to get into Kingdom Hearts name, and that's a very special naming for any genre of any game.
Stop it, Japan. Please.
And I think 358 over 2.
Whatever. It's dumb.
And speaking of, XSEED announced Legends of the Heroes Trials in the Sky, second chapter. So is this part 2? Because the name doesn't really tell me if it's a sequel, if it's like an expansion, or if it's like a combination.
I actually don't know what Legend of Heroes is.
Neither do I. I just know before when it was announced. And I believe it's a PS3 and a PSP game, which is very brave of them to bring out a PSP game in 2013.
Okay.
Brave is an interesting choice of word.
It's a JRPG. It's a very pretty game. I don't know. It's so new, like I said. So moving on. The last thing we have for this week, and I guess the most important thing, is Microsoft finally revealed the Xbox One release date, which was very rather lackluster. I mean, it was just like, oh, here's the release date. I figured they'd make a bigger deal out of it.
Yeah. What? Wonder why they couldn't put that out on during
Gamescom
thing.
Yeah. Yes. It seems, and surprisingly enough, they're not beating Sony to the market. They're coming out November 22nd. Which is the Friday after, both of us launch on Fridays.
Yeah, it's a week after the US date for the PlayStation 4 and a week before the European date for the PS4.
Yeah, it's curious. I mean, they are beating Black Friday, which is important to do in the States.
Mm.
But they're doing it in such a way that if they sell out day one, they're kind of in an odd position as far as getting stock ready for next week. Or I should say the following week after the launch. So I'm curious to see how much they kind of give out during the launch period. I mean, they did come out this week and said that their intentions is for people who haven't pre-ordered to be able to find an Xbox One in stores.
Yeah, we at least know it's already in production. We have seen pictures of the boxes and stuff.
Yeah, we've also seen the PlayStation 4 in production.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's curious.
And it's, I mean, the dates. I don't think it's a big deal. I mean, compared to PlayStation 4, it's like a week difference either way for people in the US or in people in Europe. I don't think that's going to change minds in any way.
No, I mean, I feel like the only way it could have changed minds is if I think they came day and date with a Call of Duty. If you came out with a big title right now, neither
one
of them.
Yeah, that would have been November 5th?
Yeah.
Yeah. That might have been a bigger deal, but this way, not really.
Yeah. The other thing is, November 22nd now becomes a terrible day for gaming in this country.
Oh, the only thing that I thought was positive about the Microsoft announcement is that they are actually able to release it on the same day worldwide. What? Well, in 13 countries, to be exact, but...
Yeah, in 13 countries.
But still, would have been nice if Sony would have been able to release it also in Europe on the 15th, but whatever.
Yeah, so yeah, like I was saying, November 22nd, as far as I know now, it's the launch of the Xbox One and all of the John's titles. It's the launch of Super Mario 3D World. It's the launch of The Legend of Zelda in between two worlds. And it's also Mario Party 3DS, but whatever. So that's going to be a very expensive day at GameStop for some people.
Probably.
I would hate to work retail that day.
Ah, jeez. Yeah.
So, yeah.
It's going to be busy for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a busy holiday season in general. But yeah, that day in particular.
I mean, PS4 yeah. launch will probably also be busy as hell.
Yeah, but it doesn't have... Like, it's just the system. I mean, it's the system.
Well, plus the games that's coming for it. So.
No, that's what I mean. Is Xbox One has that, and it has the big games for the Wii U, the big games for the 3DS.
Are you sure there's not coming anything big during the PS4 launch time?
No.
I don't have the dates in mind, so...
We did... When we were doing a calendar for the site, there's nothing really between... Call of Duty, which is the 5th, and the PlayStation 4 on the 15th. It's really like nothing coming out that week.
I guess other big titles of Battlefield are already coming out in October, so...
Yes, October 29th is also a big day for retailers.
Yeah.
So yes, it's going to be an interesting time. So yeah, I mean, we know about Martin. Anthony, are you planning on picking up any of these two consoles this year?
For me, I already have my PS4 pre-order and, like, half paid off.
No,
yeah.
It's unfortunate. It's not within my budget to pick anything up, and there's nothing that really screams at me to get it because I have enough on my plate already as far as backlog to catch up on.
Okay. So, yeah, I mean, is there anything else you folks want to talk about before we begin to wrap?
Yeah, I think we've been done with most of the new stuff, right?
Yeah.
What else?
Well, do you remember that Nintendo was supposed to have some kind of fall update for their Wii U?
Yeah.
Yeah, that got delayed.
But, I mean, it's the summer update, which is not a fall update. I believe as we heard about it, it was the end of September, which is still technically summer, and early October, which isn't summer. From what I hear, from what I've heard, it should be a pretty major update if everything they want to do is done with it.
Right.
So there's that. I did have one more topic in mind, and this is actually from last week.
Okay.
This actually comes from EA, who are announcing that they have 6 to 8 new IPs in production. And then they counted stuff like Mirror's Edge.
That's actually old news. I think that quote was pretty old and already like discussed two or three weeks ago.
It was old when we were supposed to discuss it. I don't think we did. I'm just kind of curious your stance on. Well, I guess like what do you consider an IP? Is it the world? Is it the environment? Is it something different? Because I think
if you're in the same universe and have the same name, it's the same goddamn IP. So Mirror's Edge 2 is not a new IP. No matter what you want to tell me, it's not. It might be a new beginning for you guys because you've taken so long to release a new game, so you will probably have to spend even more marketing money, but it's not a new IP.
I was going to say that a new IP is a new universe, but then what stopped me there is like the Marvel universe. Obviously, Spider-Man is a different IP than Iron Man. But supposedly they exist in the same universe. But I would say a new main character, a new storyline, new supporting cast of characters. I'd say that's all a new IP, a new world.
Okay, so then I guess the counterpoint to that is like Final Fantasy, for example. I mean, you don't consider Final Fantasy 13 a new IP.
Nope, it has the same name.
It has the same name, but it has different characters, it has different settings, it has different worlds, it has different mechanics.
But there's still often enough similarities between these games that it's still the same IP.
But, I mean, is that... Okay, then similarities and mechanics causes another problem, because then you could say something like Battlefield is basically Call of Duty.
Yep, but they're still the same name. So there's the same name, there's similarities... There are story threads that are repeated between Final Fantasy games. Like, there are story cliches that you can see in every Final Fantasy game. So it's basically a genre within itself. So that's why it's still the same IP.
Well, let's take a more recent example. Mighty Number 9 and Mega Man.
Not the same IP.
Not the same IP, but same creator, similar mechanics, similar character designs.
We don't know about the mechanics. Some of that stuff will apparently change.
Some of it, but for the most part, you go around defeating bosses in any order you want. You share their powers to use against other bosses.
Not the same universe. Probably somewhat different like gameplay.
But you were just saying that part of the reason that Final Fantasy is considered the same franchise is because it uses similar tropes. Now, Mighty No. 9 uses similar tropes to Mega Man.
Yeah, might be true, yeah.
I'm of the mindset that, if you know, Square Enix wanted to name their Final Fantasy RPG something completely different, then yes, that would be a new IP, but they wanted to sell on that IP.
Yeah, exactly. That's another point, yeah.
Okay, I'm just curious.
If EA would really consider Mirror's Edge 2 a new IP, it wouldn't be called Mirror's Edge 2.
Yeah,
it's as simple as that.
I'm always curious because I think I don't want to harp on it. I don't want to beat up people too much when they can't defend themselves. Because people always say they want new IPs. They want new IPs, which I get. I understand. But at the same time, I feel like if you get a new IP, which is basically an old IP wrapped up in a new name, how is that new? It's just something different, but the same idea. Like Mighty No. 9, it's a part in a good game, but it's basically what people wanted from a Mega Man game. It's not a new IP, as in it's a brand new idea.
But the difference there is it's something that people have been clamoring for, but Capcom isn't giving them.
Yeah.
That's the difference. If I say I want new IPs, it's because I want something that's not another military shooter. That's what I want. So I want to see a shooter that's not modern military and doesn't play like Call of Duty.
But let's say Ubisoft decides to do a World War II shooter. That's a brand new IP.
Yep.
But would you consider that a new IP, or would you consider that not what you wanted because it's basically the same thing that you were getting before with a new code of
paint? I don't know. Depends on what they do with a World War II shooter. I would be up for another one right about this time.
Okay, well, let's say Ubisoft already has modern military shooters, so that doesn't count.
For example, Titanfall. That's something I do want.
Okay. But Titanfall, it has some similarities, but there isn't really a... And now I guess it's not like, Titanfall is just the evolution of Call of Duty, because it introduces a brand new mechanic that isn't in Call of Duty. Let's say Titanfall didn't have the mechas, though, and it was just the shooting aspect. Would you still be interested in it?
Probably not.
Okay. So see, that's kind of what I'm curious about, because when people say they want new IPs...
It's not just new story elements. It's also, give me something I haven't seen before, or played before.
But at the same time, you can introduce new elements in an established IP. Is that a bad thing?
Yeah, the problem there is it rarely happens. Because they want to keep the IP as close to what this IP is known for, because they want to sell it to the same millions of people that they are already selling it to.
Yeah, but let's say the next Call of Duty has mechas in it.
Awesome. I would probably buy it.
Okay, so that's enough of a change for you, but you wouldn't mind it if they'll call
it. If they would really change it up, sure, I will take a look at it.
Okay. I'm just curious, because IP talk has always intrigued me, because I think when people beg for new, they want what you say. They want new ideas, they want new...
Yeah.
But you don't necessarily need that in a new world.
No, not necessarily, but like I said, the problem is usually... They don't introduce new ideas, or at least big new ideas, in already well-established IPs that are already selling millions.
Well, I mean, I think it depends on that. But yeah, there are some that play it safe. And you can also end up with fatigue, as we saw this week. We didn't cover this in news because I'm not really one to speak on it. I don't have the expertise. But I think they said Madden 25 sales are down, 25% this year over Madden 13?
Yep.
And it's down, I think, 50% from 3 years ago.
That's a
lot. So, you know, people that is a huge number, but like I said, I'm not an expert. I mean, it could just be that there was a million people waiting for next-gen versions.
I don't know. Maybe people are kind of tired of how many changes or the lack of changes is.
Yeah, I mean, I think this generation, partially for going on so long, also kind of showed the weakness in EA not having any competition, where they really didn't have any needs to challenge themselves to be better.
Yeah.
And that goes for a lot of other genres. I think wrestling games are also up there with the fact that THQ has a monopoly on... I mean, granted, they've always had a monopoly on it, but at least the generation prior, they had three different teams working on three different games.
Yeah.
So you had that inter-office competition going on.
Well, not anymore. Yeah.
Not anymore. Well, we'll see what Take-Two does.
Well, yeah, apparently the same thing that THQ has been doing.
Well, I think this year, partially because they only bought them in like January, February.
Yeah, and the game was already in production, I know.
Yeah, and it makes sense because, you know, like with next-gen transition, you don't want to do a new engine, and they probably didn't have the resources to do a brand new one from the get-go.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I mean, I think that's it for this week. I was just curious because I've seen this EA thing pop up, and I see a lot of talk, especially being that I follow Nintendo news, and everybody's always clamoring for them to do new IPs. But with Nintendo, there's so many restrictions as to what counts as a new IP for them that it's always really ridiculous. I don't know why people continue to think Microsoft Soft isn't a Nintendo company. Okay, neither here nor there. Okay, so yeah, check out the website. We have reviews of Saints Row 4. We have review of Spelunkin, Killzone Mercenaries. Amnesia should be up by the time this goes out. We have I have to see what we're gonna do as far as video games goes. I want a villain's theme this week because villains are awesome, and it's also Forever Evil in the DC Comics. So there's that. And starting soon, I think. I don't have the schedule worked out in my head yet, but we're also going to start doing our countdown of the generation stuff. We have right now, speaking of, I have an idea for top 7 new franchises, top 7 most influential games, best Xbox 360 games, PS3 games, and of course the top 7 games of the generation, which will come out. The top 7 games of the generation I know is going to be on November. I want to say November 11th. It's the week of the PS4 release. It's that Monday. That much I have on my schedule already. So look forward to that. Look forward to everybody's suggestions. I'm sure we're all going to agree completely on all this, and it's going to be a very thing to pick, and it's going to be no infighting between us. So that's a thing to look forward to. So for Anthony, Martin, and myself, this has been Duo with an episode 121.
Get us later.
Bye.